Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Well, Russell is not alone. There are thousands and thousands of people out there that are suspecting that they may have a sexual addiction. They're not even sure what it is, but they know they have this compulsive desire to pursue different forms of this disease, and they can't stop. And that's what this show is all about. It is about helping people to get healthy, to find the support they need, to make different choices, and more importantly, to develop the support to access a variety of infrastructure that will change their life. Hi there, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and this is the Strength, Hope, and Recovery Show. It's Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And, boy, I have an exciting guest tonight. Kathleen is actually going to be talking about what it's like to be a partner of a sex addict. And more importantly, she's going to talk about the resources and the tools that she has used to get healthy. This is an amazing woman who sponsors tons of people and has fabulous advice and guidance so that you, if you are a partner of a sex addict, can access the help you need. So I hope you'll stay tuned for this show, as Kathleen really does have a lot to offer. And in addition to that, I kind of have an interesting announcement. Now, you all know that I always say that you, if you're listening to the show and you're a partner of a sex addict, or you are married or love a sex addict, it is so important to get the help that you need. And one of the ways that you can do that is by accessing workshops, treatment centers, support groups, therapy groups, and of course work with certified sexual addictions therapists, of course one of which I am. And our community just received an announcement, and it's from a very good friend of ours that says, "Hey everyone, we recently posted on this listserv about an opportunity for people in recovery." Yes, you guys, if you're a sex addict and you're in a 12-step group or you have a sponsor or you're seeing a certified sexual addictions counselor, you too can register for a series of workshops with Dr. Patrick Carnes from his book, A Gentle Path Through the 12 Principles. Now, each quarter, there will be a weekend workshop beginning December 6th through 8th in Phoenix, Arizona. And these workshops are for those in recovery to delve deeper in their personal recovery program. Tammy writes, I personally will be participating in this. As she typically attends these and does the administration for them, but she says, I invite you to attend if you are in recovery and or you can feel free to refer clients who are open to opportunities for this deeper work. So gang, I'm here to tell you this is a chance of a lifetime. You know, one of the most special things about my training was that I got to train with Dr. Carnes himself. And anybody who knows anything about sexual addiction, if you've been on the net and you've tried to figure out how you could get help, or you went to Barnes & Nobles or Borders and you've looked up sexual addiction, you know that Dr. Patrick Carnes is the guru. He is one of the founding members of this movement. And he is actually going to be helping people do their deeper work. It's not just about sex addiction, but it crosses all addictions. As a clinician and or as a person in recovery, this is a great opportunity to take time to focus on personal growth and to offer as a resource for others a chance to enhance your recovery effort. Now, I don't know about you, but I clearly believe that if you can spend time with a master talking about addiction and doing your own personal work and working the 12-step process, it just doesn't get better than that. Now, Tammy writes that Dr. Carnes has three goals in mind for these weekends. One, preserve and expand your understanding of the 12 steps and learn the principles behind each one as they play out through the dimensions of daily living. You know, your lifestyle, your work, your money, sex, and intimacy. Okay, now there's not one listener that wouldn't say that they could improve their lifestyle, their work, their money, their sex, and their intimacy. Two, Dr. Carnes wants to help individuals enhance their recovery program in ways that support new life skills and gain tools to help achieve their personal goals of living a life that models serenity, focus, balance, and harmony. Now, this is what's so amazing. Dr. Carnes is generously donating 100% of the proceeds of both Genopath books and his time teaching these retreats to the American Foundation for Addictions Research. You know, it's called AFAR. And I'll tell you, what we know about this illness is that we don't have enough research. And this is Dr. Carnes' way of spreading the word, donating the monies, and creating more research so that we will have an empirically based foundation by which to look at sexual addiction and addictions and know what percentage of people get better and know what parts of the brain it affects and know what feelings are most prevalent when there's addiction. So if you want more information on this vital organization, it's available on www.addictionsresearch.com. And the registration form is available on www.the12principles.com. And if any of you didn't catch that, you can feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. And I will send you the links for both of those websites. Now, if you're a clinician listening to the show and you are in the process of getting certified, ITAP is donating 5 ITAP CEUs per weekend workshop for that part, which is didactic. Therefore, you can accumulate 20 ITAP CEUs, which includes NADAC, NASW, and some of the bigger organizations for therapists. ITAP supports the work of AFAR, and we believe that the CSAC community will benefit from these workshops. If you have questions about this program, don't hesitate to contact Penny Johnson at pjohnson@newfreedomcorp.com. Now, I've been asked to spread the word because they want a lot of people to join in what we all believe will be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get to study with Dr. Carnes. And like I said, I studied with him. The man is amazing. You know, it is so phenomenal that he has spent all of his time helping people with addiction, specifically sex addiction, and he's just a phenomenal teacher, a very humanistic person, probably the best speaker I've ever heard. So when he's telling stories about addiction, they're riveting, and they speak to the heart. So I'm very excited to be letting everybody know about that. And can't say enough good things about it. If you are considering getting your partner, getting your spouse, getting your friend a Christmas present, I would look into this. I'm sorry I don't know the cost, but it will be worth every cent. And you never know, you might just happen to see me there too. Because anytime I can watch Dr. Carnes in action and learn from him is a gift that obviously keeps on giving. Okay. So there's just lots of exciting stuff out there for the community. And, you know, you've heard me talk about Thanks for Sharing and how much I enjoyed that movie and how I was somewhat concerned about, you know, telling my clients about it and really didn't tell my clients because I felt that there were a lot of triggers in it. And at the same time, I have talked to a lot of CSATs that are in recovery that absolutely have shared it with their clients and believe that it is not as triggering as I would believe that it could be. That's one of the problems about not being in recovery myself is that I can't speak from the wisdom of knowing what it's like to have a sex addiction. I'm glad about that, but I'm also sorry about that. I know that I had a conversation with Dr. Carnes that was twofold. One was I said, do you think I can be a good therapist in this community since I don't have this personal addiction? And, of course, he said yes. And then the second thing I asked him was, do you think that it's going to be a problem that I'm female in this predominantly male population, even though we all know that women are involved and just haven't come out of the woodwork? And, you know, he looked at me as if I were crazy, actually, and he said, no, it matters not what sex you are. It's how you help people get to the healing work. And that has always stayed with me, and it's encouraged me to continue with this work. Now, there have been a lot of questions in the news, in the media, and in our own organization about, you know, what is the difference between internet porn images and, you know, the old direct processing of visual images that perhaps your parents looked at, older brothers and sisters, you know, what's the difference? And one of our CSATs said, you know, actually there are some very real differences in the fact that internet porn images are now presented in rapid succession. It's a variety of kinds, often activities and interests that the viewer would never have thought of if it were not for the internet. So in other words, the internet exposes us to visual images that we had no idea was even out there. And that causes a compulsion. It can first stir interest, then obsession and addiction. Every form of conventional porn you mentioned has a direct cost attached, whether it's magazines, films, video, etc. They all cost money, but internet porn is mostly free. It also leaves no trace, we are led to believe, whereas the other forms all have a physical presence that can be discovered. You know, how many of you absolutely looked at a magazine and went back to that magazine over and over and over again because it was your cousins, your fathers, your grandfathers, your grandmothers? Well, basically, our clinician says internet porn can and is being viewed by a much younger audience than conventional porn. So for that reason, internet pornography is much more dangerous than old-time pornography, and that is one of the reasons that it's contagious. It creates an obsession and then a compulsion, and then it lures you back in to watching more and more pornography. So that is for people that have sexual addiction. Tonight, we're going to be talking with Kathleen, who's going to be sharing a little bit of her story and the tools and the resources that she has used to get healthy. This is a very wise woman. And Kathleen, welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I solicited you because you are so wise and you have done so much for the community, helping primarily women, but some men, who had partners with sexual addiction. Would you mind just sharing a little bit of your story as to how you got into this and how you became such a helper in the community?
Yes, I'd be happy to. First of all, I attend a COSA meeting. That is Codependence of Sex Addicts. And a few years ago, I found out my husband was having an affair. Turned out that it was not his first one. I confronted him and told him he had to stop if we stayed together. And he told me, probably the only time he was ever honest with me for a long time, he said, "I don't know if I can stop." But we decided to stay together, and I insisted immediately that we go to a counselor. I also found out that he'd been involved in porn, internet porn, movies, prostitutes, phone sex, computer sex, bookstores, and meeting women on the internet. I didn't really know what to do. One of our sessions with one of our counselors suggested that I attend COSA. My husband and I attended an SAA meeting, that's Sex Addicts Anonymous. It was an open meeting, and I wanted to know everything I could learn about addiction, and I wanted to learn fast. I actually look forward to going to the meetings each week and seeing my friends. I've been to many of their homes, and they've been to our home, and I've seen a lot of people come and go, but I'm still there after 15 years in the program.
Wow. So 15 years you have been participating in this program. You've been attending meetings. And, you know, I know that there's a certain sacredness to 12-step meetings, but most people know that in 12-step meetings, you attend, it's anonymous,
right.
You can pass, you don't have to speak, you can hear other people's stories or you can share your own, and oftentimes there's a topic that they may talk about that is applicable to the process of an addiction. So COSA follows that kind of format, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Okay, and so when you went to your first meeting, were you afraid?
I was scared to death. I didn't want to talk, and when I did speak, all I could do was cry. But I found out later that that's what everybody does when they enter the doors. And I thought I'd only be there 3 to 4 weeks, and we'd be cured and be moving on our way. 15 years later, I'm still sitting there.
So does that mean that once you enter into the support group, you never get out?
I don't know that, but I don't want out because these
okay.
people are my friends, and I see them outside of the place, and they understand me, and they love me for what I am, and they know everything about me, and as they say, they love me anyway.
That's fun. You know, as a matter of fact, I know that when I first started referencing, you know, Al-Anon and Narnon, the support groups for drug or alcohol addiction. It was for people that, you know, obviously loved somebody who had a drug or alcohol addiction. They went to the meetings and they came back mad. And they came back mad because they were surprised that the meetings didn't help them learn how to leave the loved one. They're like, I thought that I'd get some help in there. And, you know, what it ended up doing was it's teaching me how to put up with it. Mm-hmm. And certainly from a newcomer standpoint, that can look like what it is from afar. But it's really a way and a mechanism to show you how you can cope and also develop your own internal strengths, is it not?
Exactly, yes. And I went with the attitude that I wanted to stay in the marriage. I didn't want to leave it. I wanted help to make the marriage better.
Well, that makes total sense. And truly, even the people that I've sent, that is the initial feeling they have, like, oh, my gosh, this is going to make me, this is going to teach me how to put up with this stuff. But it's so much more than that. It is about finding who you are and staying strong despite what other people in your life are doing.
Yes, so, it doesn't make you put up with what they're doing. It helped me to understand the addict, to understand addiction, made me to be more understanding of their problem and thereby more tolerant. Now, don't misunderstand, being tolerant does not mean being tolerant of his behavior, but tolerant of his problem. And one of the best things I ever did was go to COSA, choose a sponsor, and start working the 12 steps.
Okay, so then I'm going to just ask you some questions about COSA so that our listening audience, for the addicts who may have a partner that didn't know there was a COSA out there, or the partners that are listening because they want to get help for their addict partners, tell me what you like the most about COSA.
I like my friends the most, probably. And I like hearing other stories because I know then I'm not alone. And when I share mine, they know they are not alone. So
okay, so it's that sense of community where you realize that you're not the only person dealing with this and that there are other people that are dealing with it. And really, there are coping strategies for this kind of
stuff.
Yes,
there are. Yes.
Yeah, so what lessons have you learned from COSA, and I happen to know that you personally create topics or lesson plans for COSA. So tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. I've done a lead, which is telling my whole story as I know it. There will always be some unknowns in that story, but I tell it as I know it. And I've given talks on helpful hints to healing. I've done acceptance, forgiveness, why do we stay? Many other topics. I've read and given reports on many, many recovery books. In 15 years, I've done a lot of talking.
I bet you have, and a lot of reading and studying.
Yes, yes. And in our meetings, we talk about steps and denial, powerlessness, and tools of the program. We choose a topic from here each week, and we talk about surrender, letting go, how to improve your higher power, your relationship with the higher power. And we have whatever topic someone wants to talk about, you know, it might be on their heart that week and they want to bring it out. So we'll talk about whatever anybody wants to bring up. Even if I have a plan, we drop the plan and help the person.
Okay, so although you may have an agenda, just in case someone doesn't have a topic for that night, but if somebody really has an issue that they want to talk about, that's first and foremost.
Yes, it is, because many times when people come the first meeting, they need to unload because they haven't shared with anyone outside of their, you know, with their friends or anything, and so they really want to talk to some people that want that do understand their problem.
Well, I bet. And what would you say is the most common feeling that a partner might feel who's, you know, going to COSA for the first time?
Fear. But when I first found out, I just couldn't believe this was happening in our family. And as we started counseling in COSA, I wanted to know all there was to know about sex addiction. I read every book I could find. I read so many books I had to stop because I was getting very depressed. And I felt very betrayed that our vows had meant nothing to my husband. And I had every feeling a betrayed wife can feel. Mad, sad, hurt, screaming, cussing, crying, wondering how this could happen to our family. We were supposedly very, very happy. I thought we were. It turned out my husband had a secret life that I didn't know about, and he was sharing that with other women, and it hurt like a knife stuck in my heart. But it took me a long time to realize that it had nothing to do with me. Sex addiction has nothing to do with the wife.
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, obviously you said that, you know, you really were finding out for the first time that your husband had this problem. Was it actually called sexual addiction 15 years ago? Because that's a fairly new term.
Yes, it was, because he started attending meetings at the same time I did. So there were meetings at that time for him also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of the counselors we went to didn't recognize that problem. We probably went to 5 or 6 before we found one that recognized the problem.
Well, I was going to say that counselor had to be very smart to know about COSA, because unfortunately there are a lot of counselors across the country that don't even realize that this illness, this disorder, this disease has support groups.
That's true. And then we find in our program a lot of the men don't tell their wives about COSA. I don't think they want them to understand the addiction sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to continue.
Well, that may be, or my experience has been that a lot of the men are afraid that if their wives go into the same room together, there may be power and strength in numbers, and that she might actually leave him. And so I think it can be fear-based, to be real honest.
I agree.
You know,
and some of the women do leave. They choose not to stay. It's mm-hmm. up to the individual whether they want to work on the marriage or not.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the greatest, and, you know, maybe not the greatest, but one of the blessings that you've received from all this work you've done based on your husband's addiction?
I think probably I'd have to say our marriage is better. I hate to say that because I don't want addiction to make our life better, but I think it has. And I think that we are closer. I feel that he doesn't have to lie to me anymore because we had complete disclosure and everything's supposed to be out in the open now. It's been a difficult journey, but one that I feel was worth all the work that I put into it. And mm-hmm. throughout the process, I knew in my heart that my husband always loved me. He was just so sick that he couldn't help himself.
Well, that's good that you understood it was a compulsion and that he more than likely had wanted to stop 1,000 times before and never had the tools to make that happen. So I know it wouldn't be fair to ask you to comment about him.
No.
However, clearly, partners and addicts may go into recovery at different points and may actually be evolving in different ways. And so you may have an addict that is way further along in his recovery than the spouse or vice versa. The wife may be more involved in recovery, because it is a recovery program for you, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yes. I've learned a lot about myself throughout this. Step 4 was the hardest.
And step 4 would be?
My own inventory.
Okay, so you kind of look at yourself and figure out what you'd like to change about yourself, what you like about yourself, and what you would rather improve.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That can be a scary process. We won't go into it because, again, there's such a sacredness around that. Can I ask you, you have kids. At what point did they find out?
Well, unfortunately, my husband worked at the same place my son worked. And he was fired for being on a computer with the porn.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so we had to tell our children right away when he was fired. I knew it about 3 months before they did, but I kept it to myself. But then we had to share everything with them. But our children are older, so they were able to accept it.
Yeah, you know, that's always a question that so many couples have about, should we involve the children? Should we let them know that dad or mom has a sickness? How much should we talk to them? And I always say that is such an individual issue, but what I truly believe, and it's the same with the disclosure process, is that it's always best if you have a lot of support. You have one or two therapists supporting the kids and somebody who's comfortable talking to families, because oftentimes kids will hear the information and they won't want to talk about it, and they internally try to process it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the younger they are, the harder that is.
Oh,
so
definitely.
Your kids were late teens or early adults?
Early adults, yes. And one counselor wanted to see our children, and our daughter did go see him, but our son did not want to talk to him. So that was his choice. We let him make the choice. We didn't force him. We just told him he would like to talk to him, and he said no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. You gave your son choice, that you didn't force
mm-hmm.
anything on him. And so, obviously, this support group has been instrumental. Now, talk a little bit about what a sponsor does in a program like this, because earlier, before you even were on the call, I said you have sponsored a lot of women and men in the community, in part because you've been in it so long. Sometimes people get better and they drop out, but you really believe in giving back.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I might emphasize that all of the COSA meetings do not allow co-ed. The meeting I attend does, but all of them do not. So I think if anyone's interested in going, they better check to see if it can be co-ed.
Well, and how could they get that information? You know, what would they look up on the Internet?
The website is www.cosa-recovery.org.
Okay. And so they can get on
email.
That website, put in your state, and up comes all the available meetings in the state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And their representative, which I am one for my group. I mean, if they go in and under my state, they'd get my name and they would call me.
Okay. And so you don't mind having your phone number advertised as a leader?
No, I don't. Anytime I can help anyone, I'm more than happy to.
And yet there are some people that would go to a COSA meeting and they'd really want to be anonymous. They wouldn't particularly want strangers calling them.
No, that's
so
true.
This is a way that you give back that is not necessarily what everybody does.
No, everybody would not want their phone numbers out there, but I feel like it's something I have to do. I mean, people were there when I went. They helped me, and I should be there helping someone else now. It's payback time.
Mm, that's a good point. And, you know, obviously in 12-step groups, oftentimes people share their phone numbers, their first name only,
yes.
to keep it anonymous,
mm-hmm.
so that if you've got a craving at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can call somebody and get some help with that. In COSA, do they also share phone numbers and first names?
Yes, they do, although I've never had anyone call me at 2 o'clock in the morning, but it wouldn't bother me if I did. It would be okay, because that means somebody needs help. But yes, they do. Most of the time they will share. Some people won't at first, but they eventually do.
Okay, so really this is an opportunity for people to be able to reach out and talk to other people about what they've been through and what has helped. And when you said tools of recovery, you know, you mentioned words like forgiveness and surrender. And why is that so important in recovery?
Well, I think you have to use the tools, which are the 12 steps. And
okay.
you have to surrender everything to your higher power and let him take over, because we have no control over this. We have to turn it over. In my case, it's to God, but
mm-hmm.
people choose what their higher power is. It's up to the individual.
Well, that's an interesting thing because, you know, there are some people that are agnostic or atheists that would go, oh,
right.
my gosh, if I have to talk about God, I don't want to go. So for them, their higher power might be whom or what?
It can be anything they choose it to be. It can be a tree, can be a flower, could be another person. I think many times the women come in and their higher power is their husband until they find out that he is not the higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that said many times.
Well, that's interesting because oftentimes I will say, you know, just think of your higher power as the universe or the meeting itself, you know,
mm-hmm.
because oftentimes you go to meetings to get a kind of a higher sense of wisdom about what to do in this situation. So although the 12 steps really is about surrendering to that higher power, it's also about letting go of the anger and the rage and the hurt, is it not?
It is, but I don't think that you can do that right away. That anger stays for quite a while. It's very difficult to give it up because you've been hurt so deeply that one or two meetings doesn't take that away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point.
Well, we always ask someone, when they attend a meeting, come at least five meetings before you decide whether it's for you or not.
Mm-hmm. So. And you give that kind of advice because?
Because the first meeting is just kind of, you know, they're getting used to us, they don't know us, they don't know whether we're going to go out and tell their story to the whole town. I think they have to gain our confidence before they're ready to really share with us.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of it has to do with trust, and that takes some time. It can't or typically doesn't occur in one session or even two.
No,
and that's why you say five meetings.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like trusting your husband. When you've been through this with him, it takes a long time to trust him again.
Mm-hmm. How did you know that you were beginning to trust your husband again?
Well, I can leave him on the computer and not worry about it. I can leave the home and be gone for maybe all day and not worry what he's doing. Now, I don't know what he's doing, but I'm praying that he's still working his program and staying clean. But I don't ask questions anymore, and I don't sneak around and look. I don't check anything. I just trust that he's doing what he should be doing.
So it's not uncommon for you to have met women either inside of COSA or just in your experience that are private eyes and do a lot of snooping and spying.
Well, I myself was excellent at it. I did a lot of snooping. He'd get in the shower and I'd get in the briefcase.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I did that for quite some time, but now I feel I don't have to do that anymore. So I guess it's the trust is there. I don't need to check. Until something tells me that he's done something wrong, then I'm going to trust that he's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I often tell my listening audience that you make decisions and are guided by your head, what you think, your heart, how you feel, and your gut, what you know. It's that intuition. Now,
right.
If you were going to think about your head, your heart, and your gut, how do you think you make the best decisions?
I think I make my best decisions now in my head. I probably
mm-hmm.
moved with my gut for a long time, but I don't have those feelings anymore. They've been removed. So rule with my head and my heart because
mm-hmm.
I can say I truly love my husband now. I don't love the addict, but I love him.
Boy,
and
that's
I,
a hard thing, isn't it? Because
it
they
is
seem
hard.
So entwined. the addict.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he has his addict under control now, which it took a long time. It wasn't easy, and it wasn't a short time. It took several years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when we talk about partners of addicts in general, I mean, there is no doubt that part of your control was making sure that you weren't going to be surprised by more behavior. It's almost like partners become hypervigilant to make sure that they aren't shocked by new information. And that can create some very unhealthy behaviors. Like you said, he'd go to the shower, you were in his briefcase. You wanted to find out so you weren't caught off guard.
Well, and I wanted to confront him. You know, that was my goal. Anything I found, I wanted to confront him about because I wanted to know everything. Now, some women don't want to know anything, but I'm very inquisitive about everything, and I wanted to know everything.
I think
and
if you tell
your
story, you know, one of the things that's so impressive is that you understand that your experience is not universal, that everybody does it differently. So some women would be just like you. They'd be snooping and for that very reason to confront, where other people just, they don't want to know. In some ways, you know, sexual addiction is, Patrick Carn says, the very first task in working with an addict is helping the addict break denial.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, that's important for the partner of a sex addict, too. If they don't want to know anything, if they'd rather be in the dark, they're probably in denial. They probably don't think they can cope. But there's a difference between snooping to find out and having faith that information's going to come to you and you will eventually find out. So is it that you snooped? Is that how you first found out about the addiction with your husband? Or did information just come to you?
I really did not snoop. I was in his office one day and I saw, he was at work, and I saw this letter or piece of paper on his desk, and it was an email from a woman that he'd met on the internet, and he had been with her for a day and a half at the Holiday Inn. So really, it came to me. I wasn't really looking for it because I didn't suspect anything. And when he came home from work, I said, "Do you want to tell me about Barbara?"
Uh-huh.
And he proceeded to tell me. I mean, he was caught. He couldn't think fast enough to lie his way out of that, which there's been a lot of lies, but I think that now we don't have to have the lies.
Oh, that's fantastic. And that is so freeing and liberating, is it not?
It is. Yes, it is. To me, it is. Because my stomach used to get in knots because wondering what's going to happen next, what's happening. And now I don't have that feeling. I'm very comfortable in myself.
Well,
I'm not saying that he'll never act out again. He might, but but I'm okay. I'll handle that when the time comes.
So you kind of keep it in the moment. You stay in the present. Because
yes.
he's given you enough reason to believe that he's really working his program. And
yes.
Your serenity is not dependent on him alone.
No.
Mm-hmm. So when I use that word serenity, what does that mean to you?
Well, it brings me to the serenity prayer.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I only handle what I can handle today. Let tomorrow take care of itself.
Okay, so serenity really means that you are going to be able to handle things kind of a day at a time.
Yes, I know I can. There's no doubt in my mind. My program has given me confidence that I can handle anything.
Mm-hmm. And when you hear the terminology so oftentimes used in programs about it's progress, not perfection, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, I guess I see that relationship to the addict, that he's working, but he's not always perfect. And someday perfection will exist, but it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm. And does that ever apply to you personally, progress, not perfection?
Well, I suppose it did. I wasn't aware of it, but I think all the work that I've put into it was my progress. I'm still not perfect. I'm still working at it. I'll probably never be perfect, but I'm still working at it. Mm-hmm. I still read books.
Give us an approximation of how long have you been married? You don't have to give the exact dates, but about how long?
50 years.
Wow. And so sometimes, you know, the old adage about you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I mean, obviously you were hungry for knowledge and you craved information so that you could understand this better. And I don't know if you described yourself as curious, but you were eager to learn.
I think both. I was very curious because I knew nothing about addiction. And I wanted to learn.
You know, as women get older, oftentimes they feel like they have less value in today's world. And yet really, Kathleen, this has been a real opportunity for you to know that you are growing wiser and wiser and wiser. I know you don't want to brag, but what do the women say about you in terms of your help with this addiction?
Well, I don't know if it's because I've been there the longest or not, but I have several people want me to sponsor them. And I should say no to some, but I can't. So I do sponsor several people. And I meet with them. If they can't make the meeting, I will meet with them for lunch or whatever. I give a lot of time, and that's okay.
And if you give that much time, what comes back to you in return? I mean, that's a lot of depletion. I mean, you're really giving so much of yourself. So what do you get in return?
Well, I think I get to see other people heal because I know what pain they've been through. And it's gratifying to me to see them in recovery. I've seen a lot of people come and go. Some of them don't come back. I don't know what happens to them. But the ones that stay usually are in recovery.
Mm-hmm. And is there a book that you would recommend for somebody who loves an addict,
Sex addict? Well, first of all, I read Out of the Shadows. I know that's basically for the addict, but it was very enlightening for me also. And I read it the very first when I found out about the addiction. But the book that I've liked the most has been Women Who Love Sex Addicts by Doug Weiss.
Okay.
I loved that book.
Because?
Well, it just had so many good things and how to handle things that come up and all. And I've used it a lot in our meetings, just, you know, boundaries and the low self-esteem and just lots of things.
Mm-hmm. And Doug Weiss is a certified sexual addictions therapist and has his own program. I can't remember, is it out of Colorado or?
I believe
remember?
It is. I believe it's out of Colorado, yes.
And he's got CDs and tapes and all sorts of things to help help couples
mm-hmm.
that are going through this. So
mm-hmm.
for anybody who's interested, they can Google Doug Weiss, Weiss, Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist, CSAT. So Out of the Shadows helped you to understand the actual addiction, and then
yes.
Doug's book helped you, it helped to normalize your feelings, and it helped you...
Yes.
Yeah.
I read a lot of books, but this is one of the best ones. And by the way, it looks like he's out of Fort Worth, Texas now, heart to heart.
Okay.
On the back
okay.
of my book, it says that.
Fort Worth, Texas. Okay. And you were one of the brave women that went to Thanks for Sharing. So as a partner of a sex addict, you know, I said on the show last week and this week alike that, you know, I was afraid that this would traumatize somebody to watch this movie. And then I especially said I was afraid it would traumatize the partner of a sex addict. So What was that like for you to see? Thanks
and
for sharing.
Movie. Thanks for sharing. Oh, I didn't think it was all that good. I think there were only about 3 minutes of recovery, and the rest of it was just sex.
Okay.
So it would not be something that I would recommend.
Okay, and then what'd you think of Don Juan?
Oh, that was even worse. That porn, just porn.
Okay, so you personally would not advise either one of them?
No, I would not.
Well, I so appreciate you coming on the show, talking about what it feels like to be a partner. Hopefully you have inspired some men and women who are dealing with this very raw subject. You know, people can go to Blog Talk Radio and Google sex addiction and this show comes up, but they can also go to iTunes and, again, search for sex addiction and the show comes up. And so there is no doubt that you will be heard by thousands of people, you know, across the world. And, you know, you've been such a mentor to so many. And I have to admit, you've even been a mentor to some gay men who have had partners that have had sex addiction. And do you find that that is any different than working with a woman?
Not really. Not really. They have the same problems we have.
Mm-hmm.
But I've enjoyed working with the fellows to see the other side of things. And sometimes they've helped me understand my own husband from the male viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Well, as we leave the show for today, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listening audience who may be suffering with this affliction or who may love somebody who's suffering?
I'd say get on the website, find a meeting, go to the meeting, get a sponsor, and work the 12 steps.
Okay, and give us that website one more time.
Website, www.COSA-recovery.org.
Okay. Well, Kathleen, thanks again for sharing this information, and I know that you will have helped, again, a zillion other people that are listening to the show, so I really appreciate that. Keep up the good work. But as always, with COSA and CODA and ACOA and Al-Anon and Narnon, the other important thing is to take care of you. And so I want you to take especially good care of yourself.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks again. Talk to you soon.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye. And, you know, that's such an important feature. When you are in love with someone who has this addiction, first and foremost, you have to work on self-care. You know, your body has just been through a shock, your mind is reeling, your heart is broken, and you may go, my gosh, what do I do next? Always default to self-care first. And COSA is a way to create that self-care because you're with other people who have had the same experience as you. But then there are other forms of self-care, like exercising and bubble baths and listening to music. And I know some women will say retail therapy, but I'm not so sure that I agree with shopping. It can get you into a lot of troubles and create a whole nother addiction. You know, maybe that's some extra sleep or eating well or falling through with a hobby. You know, when you're heartbroken, it can feel burdensome to get out your jewelry and make a bracelet or get out, you know, the oil paints and paint a picture. But that kind of self-care is very therapeutic and something that I highly encourage partners to do. Get on the website. I would recommend for any partner who wants some help and assistance that you get the book, you know, for COSA, for couples of recovering sex addicts. You know, I think that that can be very, very helpful. It talks about 12 steps, and then it also talks about stories that people have been involved in. So if you have any questions, you can feel free to contact me at carolthecoach@aol.com. Go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Read about my services, my resources, and the stories that so many of my clients have given to me that have allowed me to put that on the website. And the national website that has gobs of resources and certified sexual addiction therapists in your city, hopefully, at least in your state, is sexhelp.com, www.sexhelp.com. So, again, I appreciate everybody listening. I encourage you to email with me with any questions. And I want to leave you with some hope, strength, and recovery that you can get through this. You're not alone. And there are plenty of tools and resources that will help to buffer the pain. And as I say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. So we'll see you again next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach.